Greetings, true believers. Welcome to the Islanders Anxiety podcast from Lighthouse Hockey. My name is Dan Saracini, channeling the late, great Stan Lee. Joining me via Skype is my friend Mike Leboff. And Mike, we have a couple of games to talk about and then a really weird schedule to talk about.
Yeah. And yes, of course, the Stan Lee thing. I'm not huge into comic books or superheroes, but I am huge into Mike Francesa, so I really got a kick out of Mike's not his disrespect and then not apologizing, but doing he did, in only a way Mike Francesa can, he apologized. That's as close to a Mike Francesa apology as we'd get.
Yeah, so. Mike, there's definitely a lot of people out there, and Mike is one of them, that don't have the I'm sorry gene. And I guess that's as best you're going to get. But if everybody doesn't know, we talk about Stan Lee, the great Stan Lee, passed away this week. And somebody called into Mike Francesa's show and was like, hey, Mike, what do you think? And Mike was like, who's that? Oh, who cares? And then claimed that he had never bought a comic book before. And then later on, when people are like, what do you mean, who cares? He was like, I never said who cares. I will say this, though, Mike did apologize on Twitter, basically saying, you know, he didn't disrespect the guy. You got to read the replies on the tweet because they are hilarious. And one guy, I don't know who he is, but he was like, Mike, if the Yankees had Spider-Man on their roster, would he have won Rookie of the Year over Otani? Stuff like that. It's too funny. But I honestly don't expect Mike Francesa to know anything about comic books or Stan Lee for that matter. But yeah, don't say who cares when somebody asks, when somebody tells you who they died. That's probably a bad idea, no matter who that person was, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway, we'll get into some Stan Lee stuff a little bit later, but let's talk about the Islanders real quick. So we're in a pretty good mood. They won last night. I should say we're recording this on Wednesday. You'll probably listen to this on Thursday. They beat the Vancouver Canucks on Tuesday, a game they really needed to win. But let's start back a week ago. When you and I last spoke, they had just come off a game against the Montreal Canadiens that Barry Trotz said was their worst game of the season. And it was hard to argue with the man. And the worst part was that they were then going into Tampa. They were going on the road to play Tampa and then the Panthers the next night or a couple of nights later. And, you know, those pretty tough places to play, at least one of them is. And, you know, if Monday night was one of their worst games of the season, I would say that, you know, Thursday night in Tampa might have been one of their best games of the season.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, they lost 4-2. They played totally fine and were heading towards at least getting 1 point. And then we all got a very unwanted flashback to Doug Weight hockey when three forwards decided to blow the zone a little bit early. Ryan Pulick turned the puck over to two completely uncovered Lightning players, and I don't know who scored. Didn't really matter. And they ended an empty netter later. And yeah, that was a real gut punch. That really sucked. They played a good game there and then just came away empty. And it was just like, man, seriously?
I thought that was so funny that for the first couple weeks of the season, everyone was like, the Islanders are overperforming their metrics. They're not generating enough shots and goal or whatever. And then the game that they actually do, and they do it against one of the best teams in the league, obviously they lose in regulation. So it was karmic payback for the Islanders, I guess. But I was kind of thrilled with the way they played that game. Cause I had a suspicion that, you know, they'd kind of hang with these better teams under Trotz, and they've shown that kind of, panache against better teams so far. So I was, you know, we always say on here, like, the Islanders have had enough moral victories to kind of last you a lifetime, but that was a moral victory.
Yeah, no, for sure. Because of my commute, I end up missing a lot of first periods, and that seems to be where a lot of stuff happens, either one way or the other. I missed the first period of the game in Pittsburgh, which they got pretty much shelled, and then they came back and won the game. I missed the first period of that game against the Lightning, and apparently they just came out and just completely blitzed the Lightning from top to bottom. And like you said, I mean, a lot of people at this point, you know, the kind of writing the book is like, oh, well, the Islanders, they're kind of getting lucky. Their underlying numbers are pretty awful. And yet here they come out and all of a sudden it's like, what is happening right now? And, you know, the Lightning took a 2-1 lead in the second period. But then the Islanders, I thought they played great in the third period. They tied the game and it was, you know, not an easy thing to do. The Lightning are one of those teams where, yeah, and they're definitely one of the better teams in the league. And what makes them so good is that if you manage to get, like, pressure in their zone, oh, by the way, their goalie is super good. So it's not like just a matter of, oh, well, we need a couple of shots, it won't be okay. Like, Vasilevskiy is really good, and he's going to stop it, but they managed to break through. I think it was Josh Bailey, wasn't it? I think it was.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
Superstar
of course
Josh Bailey.
Of course it was Josh Bailey.
The man who we anointed last week as a superstar coming through again, and he had another one, too, the other night. They tied the game, and again, they were cruising towards a point at least, and then Jordan Eberle and Brock Nelson and whoever else was on the other line all decided to kind of leave the zone too early, and people were getting on Ryan Pulock for turning the puck over, and I get that, but man, you can't have three dudes leaving the zone like that. We saw that all last year, and I just had the worst kind of flashback. Oh my God, this is and it's funny because, you know, here we are. We've been talking now for 2 months about the difference between last year and this year, and you saw it literally in one play. Like, you saw, you know, 55 whatever minutes of the way they're kind of supposed to play now, and then 1 minute of the way they played all of last year, and it's kind of a big difference. And this is why Barry Trotz said that's why the details matter. And so he's right. That's why the details matter. And Jordan Eberle apparently got a bit of a chewing out, and maybe Nelson did too. And yeah, it was a moral victory, and you know, it's still early, so I guess it's not the worst thing in the world. But yeah, you don't want to get too many of those, because at some point you're gonna have to learn those things.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, I was not thrilled that the thing that sucked about it was the mistake was made by Pulock in like in a tangible sense, but like you said, it was not his fault. And I was just worried that obviously Trotz and them know that's not his fault. So I was just worried that all this like, you know, trust that was put in him would kind of be yanked away. And then I had to remember, like, this is Barry Trotz we're talking about. So just because he made a mistake, he's not going to be put in Chateau de Bow Wow for like six, seven games and be a healthy scratch. So I was happy to see how they reacted to it too, in like the post game as well. So
yeah,
like, you know, moral victory sucks that it's only a moral victory and they didn't get a point out of that game because they deserved one. But, onwards and upwards from there too. Like, I was totally okay with everything that happened on that in that game, and I thought, you know, the Panthers game was like, I guess I that was a weirder one. Like, they played all right, I thought, but it was more they had more lapses in that game than they did against Tampa, and maybe it was just, you know, they knew they didn't have to be as sharp or whatever, but still, like, wasn't terribly disappointed with the way they played in that one either.
Yeah, they played okay in that one. I believe the same thing. Like, they came out and really played well in the first period, right? And then kind of slowly the Panthers sort of took over. They scored early in the third period. And, I think the Islanders did their best to try and come back a little bit, but it was a little bit too late at that point. And, yeah, for all the things the Islanders have done this year that the troubles they've had with the Florida Panthers are really inexplicable. I really wish it wasn't that way. I don't know why it happens that way. Every once in a while, a team has your number. Again, the Carolina Hurricanes, nobody else seems to have any problems with the Hurricanes except for the Islanders. But this year they've beaten them twice and are playing them again next week. So it's kind of weird the way things happen that way. But I thought their response was pretty good. Like, they came out and played a pretty good game. But, to go on a two-game road trip and come out with 0 points is really a tough, you know, road. Like, you can't really do that, and I don't think any of them expected that. If they were lucky to get a point out of the game against the Habs, they were arguably lucky to – bad luck to not get a point out of at least one of those two games, if not, you know, get 2 points out of them, or 4 points out of them.
Right.
That would have been great. So that brings us to Tuesday night, in which, like I said, they really needed a win, and they got one. And you know what? They played a heck of a game against the Canucks. I know the Canucks were playing on a back-to-back. They had lost the Rangers the night before. They're another team that, you know, surprised everybody. They're leading their division, and yet they're, you know, basically, thanks to one rookie and maybe a couple of other guys, Brock Besser is hurt. So they were playing Jacob Markstrom back-to-back nights, which is... okay, Travis Green, you do you. I don't know. He did whenever he does that. That's the kiss of death from the analytics community, is playing the same goalie back to back nights. But still, like, they came out and they played it. And Dom kind of hit the nail right in the head in his recap. Like, their third period, yeah, they were only up by a goal in that third period, but that was the kind of third period a good team plays. They gave them. They had about 5 minutes to go before I'm like, man, Vancouver has had nothing this entire period. They didn't do anything. And then, you know, they kind of got some desperation shots on there in the last minute or two, but they were swept away and that was it. And it was over. And I was like, boy, they really needed that. That was a good kind of win and the kind of sort of taking care of business game that, again, you want to see from a team, you know, under a new coach that's kind of learning the system.
Yeah, I think one thing that this kind of trip and the Vancouver game showed is that the Islanders are not going to be a team that comes back. Like, they're not built for that. They're not built to come back from a 3-1 deficit or even against the Panthers, a 3-2 deficit, because they're just not going to, on a consistent basis, generate a ton of chances. Like, last year the Islanders were a mess, but they were a team that could come back just because of the way they played. It was very much like high risk, throw everything they could at the net, and nobody played defense because they were all concerned about flying the zone.
Right. They could come back and score two goals, or they can give up two more goals. Like, that was basically the way it worked.
Exactly. They were a team that could come back, but they were also a team that you were going to come back against. Now the opposite is true. The opposite is true now, where the Islanders probably aren't going to come back from a, you know, two goal deficit in the third period, but they also, you know, knock on wood, are going to be tough to break down. And I was walking Jimmy during the intermission between the second and third period against the Canucks, and Chris King had an interview with Thomas Hickey, and Thomas Hickey kept saying, "We want to be under the puck." Basically, the question that was asked to Hickey was, why aren't Islanders defensemen really joining the rush as much anymore? And he said that, you know, our system right now, until we get used to it, defensemen are going to be under the puck, which basically is saying we're going to play a pretty low risk, low reward offensive style and hope one of our guys ends up doing what Thomas Kunackel did, where he was on his back, somehow scored against the goalie that was playing the second night of a back-to-back who isn't good to begin with. So, like, the Islanders are just kind of – that's just going to be who they are, especially in the early going, and it's going to, at least for now, pay off more than it's going to hurt us. And I don't think that, you know, people who aren't watching them every day, and I fall victim to this with other teams like the Ducks and stuff, when you look at their numbers, you're like, how is this team, you know, punching above its weight so well? Like, and I'm seeing it with the Islanders. I'm like, I can tell you how. Like, it sounds very eye test kind of stuff, but they're taking their chances when they get them, and they're playing structured defense, and they're hard to beat. Like, they're making life pretty easy on their goaltenders and basically daring you to score four goals against a defensive, you know, a defensive-minded team, which is not easy.
Right. That makes me think of a couple things. One, some defenseman had a really good rush at some point in that third period. I want to say it was Ryan Pulock, where he was, like, down almost near the face-off circles.
Yeah,
it
was
like Pulock. Nobody touched him. Yeah, oh, right, yeah. And he shot it wide. He was trying to hit the corner, and he shot it wide. But I was like, wow, that was a pretty cool little chance right there. And again, he was completely unmolested the entire time. So, you know, that's the kind of opportunity you're talking about, like, where the guy has space to go get it. That's interesting that Hickey would say that. I'm assuming he said that before he took that high stick in the face, his customary nightly high stick in the face. I don't know what it is about Thomas Hickey's face that sort of draws, you know, high sticks to it. But he got hit in the mouth with one of the most careless plays I've seen in a long time. Jake Virtanen was just sort of turning around and was like, oops, sorry, I hit you in the stick, in the face with the blade of my stick. And just as I said that, Butch Goring was like, you know, that reminds me of something like Gordie Howe used to do back in the 60s. And I'm like, yeah, I can see that. It was kind of half careless, half dirty. Oh man, seriously, you're going to do this? You know, probably would have started a line brawl 20 years ago kind of play. But
it was kind of the type of thing where he probably didn't mean to start to do it, but then when he was halfway through it, he's like, you know what, if I'm already at this point, I better make sure it leaves a mark on you.
And the Islanders got a 4-minute power play out of it that essentially killed the game for the most part. That was not a very well refereed game, and you bring up Tom Kuhnhackl's two goals, one of which, I'm sorry, he kicked that in. I'm sorry, I don't know if any Canucks fans are listening to this, but
I believe they let that in.
No way. That's ridiculous.
I was hoping that Kunackel would get the empty netter so he had the hat trick where he scored from his butt. He should have had a goal disallowed and then he got the empty netter. So
that would have been amazing. That would have been totally like the totally undeserved. Or, you know, would have been better, the empty netter, like if the Islanders were sort of, you know, the Canucks had the pressure on and he went to go block a shot and it bounced off of his leg and into an empty net. That would
Randy
been
Randy Jones. Yeah.
Yeah. Or Steve Bernier did that, I think, too.
Yes. Yeah.
To block a shot. Yeah. So that would have been perfect. And he would have like scored basically three goals without ever actually taking a shot on net.
And speaking of hat tricks, Nikolai Kuhlman scored a hat trick in like 4 minutes for his Russian team. I saw it the other day.
Was that his first career hat trick ever? Did I read that correctly?
It was definitely – they said it was his first KHL one, but, I mean, I don't know if I've ever – I can't remember him scoring one for the Islanders, but I'm happy for him.
Yeah, I saw that on your Twitter feed. I like that he scored a hat trick, and his reaction after scoring that third goal was almost like it didn't even happen. Like, he was just like, oh, all right. Like, I've never seen a person that unenthusiastic for a hat trick ever in my life, you know, usually, especially if you're like a 32-year-old player and you've never really had that many or maybe any hat tricks at all, you think he'd be like jumping off the walls. But he was just like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, all I thought the same thing. I thought it was pretty funny. It was almost like when he got back to the bench after the second one, it looked like he was like giving a teaching moment to a younger player. I was like, this is what a guy.
That's pretty funny. Makes me wonder what Grabowski's up to these days. Yeah, find out.
Yeah. Well, he made it to the Stanley Cup final with the
Golden Knights. That's right. Golden Knights legend, Grabowski. the old days, the Russians, the two Russians. What a great time that was. And the Tom Kuhnhackl goal, the first goal, the one where he was spinning around, that one, I mean, I kind of feel bad for Jacob Markstrom that he's going to be on highlight reels for the rest of his life.
I looked up from my desk today, and someone had ESPN on, and it was part of the interruption, and I'm like, wait a minute, that's – the Kuhnhackl goal. And they were like, I don't know, the volume wasn't on. I was far away from the TV. I couldn't get there in time to press DVR to record the Islanders being on ESPN. But it was, they were like comparing it to the Ovechkin goal that he scored when he was a rookie against, I think it's Brian Boucher or Robert Esch or something.
That's pretty funny. I like that Brendan Burke was like, and he's hauled down. It's a penalty. And he scores. That was great. That was really funny. That's another one I got to go back and listen to from the Vancouver side of things. But yeah, definitely a game that the Islanders needed to win, and it was great to see that they won it. They, you know, again, it wasn't. Yeah, okay. Those two goals were pretty lucky. Again, one should have definitely been called back. One should have never happened at all. But that being said, they played a good game, and they played the kind of game you're supposed to play against a team at home. It's on the second night of a back-to-back, all the way coming from Western Canada. They did it, and now they turn their attention to another home game on Thursday night against the New York Rangers. And right now, these two teams are tied for second in the Metro, and they probably shouldn't be, by all rights. The Rangers signaled a rebuild before last season was already over, and people are like, well, I guess they're not going to win any games, and here they are, having won a whole bunch in a row, and the Islanders were written off basically on July 1st from ever having to win another game, and here they are too. So, I don't know. It's when was the last time an Islanders-Rangers game featured two coaches in their first years? Mm. That's got to be really – I mean, I don't – it's probably happened. Yeah. It's been like 45 years, but still, like, that's pretty rare.
Yeah, this whole like Islander-Ranger game is very strange because – like just the where both teams are, like when's the last time the Rangers never rebuilt? The way the Rangers rebuilt was they like signed Eric Lindros or Mark brought back Mark Messier or something, you know, like they were supposed to quote be like rebuilding after the first lockout. And then, Henrik Lundqvist happened. So
pretty much.
Like,
oh, yeah. Well, and they had a bunch of guys all come up and like be good. Like Girardi and Callahan.
Yeah.
And
Peter Prukka scored like 47 goals 1 year. Like,
right, like, but I don't think it was a rebuild. They just happened to have a lot of draft picks all sort of pan out at the same time, and that was sort of their core players. But yeah, no, it's. I mean, I'll be. I haven't watched them. I don't watch the Rangers. I don't feel like watching the Rangers. And I don't know what to think about this. Yeah, the Islanders have pretty much owned them at Barclays Center, but that doesn't mean a whole lot with a new coach, and you never know what's going to happen. Jaro Halak's not here.
That's the big problem.
I know. So we'll see. And I guess Thomas Rice is probably going to get the start. We'll have to see. But Robin Leonard played, you know, against the Lightning, and he played fine. So we'll see how that works out. I would like to see Leonard in there, but, you know, we'll have to figure it out. It's just a weird team. And the whole division is kind of funny. We haven't really talked about it much because it's been super early, and it's still pretty early. I mean, they've only played like 17 games, right? I think it feels like the season's been going on for 3 months, but it's actually only been a month and a half. And basically, the entire division is still totally up for grabs. I mean, the Penguins and Devils are in the back, and the Devils have had a real problem. I mean, apparently, the Devils have like the second worst record in the league, or the second least amount of points, which is really shocking to me.
What?
But yeah, they only have 13 points.
I don't know.
The Kings are the worst right now, but right. The
Kings and Penguins made a really creepy trade today.
Yeah. All right. Well, yeah. Well, we'll talk about that in a second. But yeah, right now, yeah, the Devils have the least amount of points in the conference. They're two behind Ottawa. So there you go. Oh, sorry. They're tied with the Knights and Blues for the second least amount of points in the league. So
that's so still, weird, because I feel like every time I see or hear Steve Cangelosi's voice, he's talking about a Devils win.
Right. And Taylor Hall is out there just like bombing guys. You know, like it's crazy. So, they're in last place, but I mean, they're only like 4 points out of the division lead. and the Islanders again are in second place, but they're also, you know, 3 points or whatever it is out of last place. So it's great to be in the mix, and it's great to not, you know, have had the whole season fall apart in the first month and a half or so. But at the same time, I don't know if anybody feels that they're safe, and, you know, the whole division is really kind of a huge mess. And I like how people are like, well, that division kind of sucks. But meanwhile, the last three Stanley Cup champions have all come from this division. So
yeah, it's just the division with Sidney Crosby and Alex Ovechkin in it.
I know. Right. The upcoming juggernauts that are the Carolina Hurricanes and Columbus Blue Jackets and the MVP too. And Taylor Hall also. So it's, and the rookie of the year. Now that I think about it, I almost forgot about our own guy. It's tough. And, you know, it reminds me of not last year, but the year before, when the Islanders were doing pretty well at the start of the season. But the problem was, it definitely wasn't last year. I thought it was the year before, but I might be wrong. There was one season where the Islanders were playing really well at the beginning of the year. And unfortunately, so was everybody else. And they really couldn't gain any traction. Yeah, it was, I think, that year. And then they ended up missing the playoffs. Am I misremembering? Am I going crazy? Might be too late.
It might have been last year, because they had a decent start last year. God, yeah. I'm a little tangled up in my head.
It didn't feel like last year, but maybe it was. But anyway, like, this is kind of an ongoing thing. And again, because it's the division, like, because this division is so packed with hard to play teams and that are always cannibalizing each other. I mean, again, we talked about, and the Flyers won like five games in a row after, you know, being almost ready to fire their coach. So you never know what's going to happen. And if you lose, I mean, the Islanders had dropped three games in a row or got 1 point out of three games. And that could have been a death knell right there had they lost to Vancouver the other night. So you can't let these losing streaks linger, because you can go from first place to last place in a hurry. Or from last place to first place, as the Blue Jackets basically did over the course of about 2 weeks. So it's good to still be in the mix, and it's good that we're here talking about it. And, you know, season's still going on, and there's a lot to learn. But it is also very tense, and it makes games like Thursday night's game and the upcoming games against the Devils and Hurricanes again against the Rangers super, super tense. Like, I mean, it's almost like playoff atmosphere already, because these games are so enormous already. I mean, it's only November, but still, like, they mean a lot.
Yeah, that's what I like. It's just so funny with the with this Rangers game. Like, it's, this game means a lot. Like, it, like you said, it means a lot. But it's like got this weird like aura to it where these two teams aren't supposed to contend. So it's like, does this game really have like that Islander Ranger feel? Even though like it says it should in the standings, and like, right. Why am I not that nervous for it? Like, why am I not? Why am I not dreading this game tomorrow? It's really, really weird. I'm in a weird place with it, and I don't want to say I'm confident that they'll win, but it also, the two styles are very different. Like, the Rangers, if you look at their numbers, are generating like a ton of high danger scoring chances, but they're also giving up a ton. The Islanders are like the opposite. Like, they their games feature very little like golden scoring chances. So it, like, the clash of styles will be very interesting. Like, this is not going to be the Rangers and Islanders we've seen for the past decade, basically. You know, the Rangers aren't playing the, like, you know, Lundqvist 36 saves, a goal off a shin pad in the final 2 minutes style that we like, you know, always say they do. So it's going to be a very, you know, weird kind of, they're two different styles and it's not going to look like a normal Islander Ranger game.
Yeah, no, it's definitely going to be two different styles. And the weird thing to me too, is like, when was the last time, you know, the Rangers have the college coach guy and the Islanders have the established Stanley Cup winning coach.
Right. Yeah, that's true too.
It is kind of weird that, you know, they would be flipped like that too. Yeah, no, I'm in the same exact place you were. I was thinking about this today. Like, I don't want to say like, oh, that game, they got it in the bag. I'm confident about that too, because I would never say that I was confident in the game. But, you know, they got a lot of things kind of working in their favor. And they need it. Like, they need those wins, and if they're going to do it. I mean, for the Rangers, again, the funny thing is, you know, Brett Sergalis had an article, I think, last week. It was like, what are the Rangers doing? Why are they winning games? I don't understand. Larry Brooks was like, they should start trading guys immediately. Like, get rid of these guys if they're not going to win games. And all of a sudden, they reeled off, like, five wins in a row. So, you know, it has been a weird season, and, I mean, anything could happen. I expect some kind of weirdness to happen in that game, too, so we'll have to see what happens. I think the points mean more to the Islanders than they do to the Rangers, but we'll have to see how that works out. And then they get 2 nights off.
That's a good way to put it. It's like a little bit of a house money thing.
Yeah.
So sure. I think maybe that, you know, that could be part of what it is like, for the past, since basically 2006, the Rangers have been, except for last year, been in contention for Stanley Cup. So like there's so much more riding on these games. Like, I don't want to lose to them. I hate them so much more than I actually do now. Like, I would be terrified seeing freaking like Jason Ward and Ryan Hogg celebrate goals in the Islanders ice. Like, they'll ruin my week.
Yeah.
Now it's like, it's a little bit less, but like, I mean, I still hate them, but it's just like, it hasn't gotten to that point yet.
I'm still going to continue my policy of not watching games against the Rangers. So I won't be watching tomorrow.
I was going to ask you that
Friday.
I was going to ask you.
Nope. Still sticking with it. So, you know, nothing has changed on that front. Status quo, as Lou Lamoriello would say. So we'll have to see how that goes. Then they get another interesting one on Sunday at 1 o'clock against the Dallas Stars. And it's the same exact feeling I have for the Rangers game. Like, I don't want to say I'm too confident about it, but I do feel like that's the kind of game the Islanders can win. It's a home matinee against a Western Conference team. The Stars just got Alex Radulov back, but they lost John Klingberg, who's basically their number one defenseman. That's such an odd team, man. They win the offseason every year. Jim Neal wins the offseason every year. He gets some kind of reels in some big fish. Oh my God, the Stars are going to be great this year, and then they end up missing the playoffs by 10 points. And you're like, wait, what? How?
Yeah, they're like the Hurricanes West.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, they've got everything going for them except like actually making the playoffs and doing stuff. And I remember one of our Stars bloggers, you know, from Defending Big D, which is great, by the way. It's a great blog. And they're like, the Stars could win their division or they can miss the playoffs by 10 points. Like, it could be anything in between there is possible. And so that's also the day that Anders Lee is running his Jam Cancer in the Can tournament. So if you haven't signed up for that, do so immediately. And you can play Can Jam with the Islanders after that game. But, you know, those are two games. And then they follow that up actually next Wednesday. So you and I will have to find a new time to record next week. I will probably try and do it Tuesday or Monday, where they play the Rangers at the Garden again. And again, it's the same exact thing. Like, if I could see them splitting both these games, I could see one team winning both of them, one team losing both. Like, it doesn't really, you know, it could kind of go either way. But I think, you know, these are three games right here that, if you're the Islanders, you really want and you really need, and you can't allow them to sort of slip away kind of like you did those games in the game in Tampa, and definitely not the way you played in Florida where you lost that too, you know, without really mounting much of a comeback.
Yeah, now and now that we're talking about it more, I really want to beat the Rangers tomorrow, obviously. and it just, you know, the Dallas game too is like, if the Islanders win, like, I fully expect they'll you know, have a letdown performance against the Stars. It was like, I always felt like, remember, like, there was like always that curse when the Islanders were actually decent, like, for a little while. Yeah. And it's always, I feel like they always played the Senators after the Rangers. They would, you know, it was like, they were like 1-26-4 in games directly after they played the Rangers. And it was always a trip to Ottawa where they'd lose. Like,
see, I always remember when the Islanders were really bad, sort of that middle period, sort of the end of the Yashin period, maybe early Tavares, end of Tavares era. And it was always like, that was the game everybody – that was their Stanley Cup final, was to play the Rangers. They got up for it. Like, you had more reporters in there than usual, and everybody got all hyped up for it, and the Islanders would come out like gangbusters, and it would be, you know, a good game, whether they won or lost. They, you know, sometimes they win, and they really put all that effort into it. And then, like you said, they'd go play some no-name team in the middle of nowhere, and then they'd just suck. Like, they would just get their butt, or, like, you know, be, that would be the time when, like, the Oilers or the Canucks or somebody would come into the at home and just dismantle the Islanders, and it was like, well, what are you going to do? It's the Rangers' curse. It's like, no, it doesn't work that way. It's stupid.
It's stupid. Just play the game. It's also funny, too, because the Ranger games obviously would be more expensive. And I remember in high school being like, I'll just go to the game afterwards. Because it would be like $4 to get into the Coliseum if, like, I even had to pay it off. Someone wasn't like, please take these tickets from me.
Yeah, right.
You know? That's usually what I got dealt with.
That went on for a long time, too. That curse.
Yeah. I haven't really heard it mentioned in a while. So they must have kind of corrected it. I think the most, you know, now that we're just talking about the most memorable Islander Ranger game. I mean, I was at a couple good ones, but the one that sticks out more than anything, just because of what happened, was the Chris Simon Ryan Hallwig game.
Oh wow.
Yeah, I remember just being at that game and being at the Coliseum, and obviously the Coliseum had the best sight lines ever, and you could see everything from everywhere, but nobody in the building knew what happened because the play was so far away. And all of a sudden, like, the Rangers were kind of rushing the puck up the ice. Ryan Hallwig was, like, in a heap. Chris Simon was kind of, like, woozily skating back. And just all hell broke loose in the Coliseum because Ranger fans were pissed. Islander fans, like, what happened? And then and I'd never been so certain. The Islanders, I think, were winning at the time, too, or they were tied. And I was like, there's no way they're going to win this game, and I'm going to be pelted with things on my way out.
I remember the one, my most memorable Ranger game, you might remember this too, was the infamous, it was at the Coliseum too, John Muckler, Mike Milbury game, where the Islanders were winning like 6-2 or something with like a minute. Let me rephrase that. The infamous Tommy Salo, Dan Cloutier.
Yes, yes.
Brawl. How could I possibly forget? But yeah, like the Islanders were up big. And John Muckler thought that Mike Milbury was like kind of showing him up because I think he put like the power play unit out there or something. And he sent his goons out there. And then the goons ended up like trying to fight Ziggy Palfy and Mariusz Tchaikovsky. And it was like, what are you doing? And then somehow poor Tommy Salo ended up on the other end of the ice against a literal psychotic lunatic in Dan Cloutier, who had his shirt off and his hair was going crazy. And he was like, I don't know who he thought he was fighting, but it was like, poor Tommy was just there, you know, just to take attendance basically. And man, that was the wrong place. And wrong time.
I feel like Milbury probably gave him like a tongue lashing for not, you know, fighting better too.
Yeah. Right?
He really like had it out for Tommy Salo. And I think also that my favorite game watching, I wasn't at this game, was the Victor Kozlov game.
Oh, yeah. I remember that one.
When he scored four goals.
I think my friend was at that game, and I was at home watching it. I kept texting him every time, Victor! Like with more capital letters and more exclamation points every time, Victor!
Yeah, that was wild. The Rangers almost came. I think Brendan Shanahan had a hat trick in that game, too. I think the Islanders were up like 4-0, and then Shanahan all of a sudden scored a hat trick. I was like, great. Like, this is going to happen now.
No, the Islanders won that game.
They did. I think they won 7-4. I think Aaron Asham and Alexei Yashin also scored in that game.
I was going to say, I remember an Alexei Yashin 2-goal game at the Garden, too. I don't know if it was his first game at the Garden or maybe some other kind of important game where they were like trying to clinch the playoffs and he just went in there and he was just a dominant player. Like, he was the best player on the ice. And it didn't happen that often, but he was just awesome.
Yeah, there were those games with him where I think he actually gets a little bit less credit than he deserves for, because he wasn't, like you said, he wasn't like great every night, but he, without him, like that, those teams wouldn't have made the playoffs, like bar none. Like, I mean, sure, they would have had Chara, but who knows? Yeah, I'm sure we would have ruined him. But I like Yashin just had those games where you're just like, how can anybody stop this guy tonight?
I mean, with Yashin, the problem was always the contract. Like, that was always – he got paid too much money. That was it. He was a perfectly fine player that got paid way too much money. And and I always say, like, you know, when they made that trade, the Luongo, Jokinen for Parrish and Kavasha trade, to me, is way worse than the Chara trade. And by the way, if you haven't seen the video yet, I think Dom may have had it today somewhere. If you haven't seen the video on NHL Network of Mark Parrish talking about how he learned of that trade and telling Brian Murray, who was the coach of the GM of the Panthers at the time, wow, that was a good trade. you should definitely check it out because it's really funny. He tells a story way better than I did. But, you know, when the Islanders made that Yashin trade, you know, Zdeno Chara was not Zdeno. Nobody thought he was going to be like a Hall of Fame Stanley Cup champion captain of his own franchise. Like, he was just a big, lanky dude who took a lot of penalties. Yeah, they gave up a first overall pick or whatever it was that, right? No, it was like the third overall pick, I think.
Yeah.
That would turn out to be Spezza. Yeah. And Bill Muckalt, who was a throw-in, whatever. And, you know, in Alexei Yashin, they had a guy who could, like, score goals. Like, he was a number one center. They hadn't had that since Pierre Turgeon. So, or Robert Reichel, I guess. But, you know, that was, that trade to me, you know, it obviously went incredibly poorly, and Chara turned out to be friggin' superhero. But, and so, you know, hindsight being what it is. But, I mean, at the time, I was super jacked about that trade.
Yeah, me too. I loved him. Especially that. And you know what? You make a good point. It was a contract, and it was also like the time that the contracts really jumped the shark. I think around that time, like A-Rod was getting paid like crazy money, huge contract.
It was like the top three contracts in the NHL were like Mario Lemieux. I don't even know who. I think maybe Peter Forsberg might have been up there, maybe Joe Sakic or both of them, and Alexei Yashin. And it was like, I mean, he's a nice player and everything, but he's not those guys. Like, why is he making the same as like Mario Lemieux? That doesn't make any sense.
I mean, this might, you know, not be true. I might have to I'll look it up and be right or wrong. But I feel like he didn't, you know, Yashin scored against the Rangers, and he had goals in the in playoff series. Like, I never felt like he was shirked like big games or whatever. Like, wasn't that kind
of
player.
His first couple of playoff rounds were pretty, I think the first year he had like one goal or something in that
against the Leafs series.
Yeah, he didn't do very well, but no, I mean, again, I just, you know, his first year he had like 40 goals that year. Like, he was totally good, and then he got hurt, he got cut.
He had that weird like wrist injury.
And he was never quite the same after. And then the problem was, of course, then they compounded the contract problem by making him the captain after they traded Pekka. And nobody liked that. I mean, Rick DiPietro said as much. Nobody liked that he was the captain. So that was another problem, too. So, but I mean, on the ice, he was, and according to Stan Fischler, he was a super nice guy. And according to everybody, he was a super nice guy, very intelligent.
Yeah, no, I remember waiting, him and Miro Chetan after games, like you'd see like the line of cars leaving, and him and Miro Chetan would get out of their car and sign for everybody in like freezing cold weather in this like random driveway where Brad Lukowich once like told us, like, yeah, like, you know, I only thing I remember is like there are some really bad areas around the Coliseum, like, so none of the players go out, and we're like, yeah Brad, it's not really that nice down here.
That's what we got to do a whole podcast on him. He was the guy. He was the one who like wanted to play for the Islanders, didn't he?
He was like an Islander draft pick, and then he was like, "This is full circle for me. This is a huge, huge deal."
Yeah,
he's like, "I want to be the leader on this team," and they slapped a letter on his sweater, and everyone was like, "Yeah, this is Brad Lukowich." I guess they kept like marketing him too as like a two-time Stanley Cup winner because he was on that Stars team as a. You know, healthy scratch basically, and then the Lightning.
The sixth guy. He had, I don't know if he had like grown up an Islanders fan or had a uncle or something who played for the Islanders or something like that, but he was a guy who really wanted to be here, and it's like, okay, that's odd. And then he was here for like a year and a half, and then they got rid of him. Like, he just was unceremoniously
they traded him to the Devils in like the most I don't even think NHL.com reported the trade. They're like, yeah, no. What do you mean Brett Lukowich got traded from the Islanders to the Devils? He's been playing for the Devils for years.
And you know, that's the perfect – I totally forgot they had traded him to the Devils. But, A, you're 100% right. And, B, that was the, like, designated destination for Islanders that had a pedigree during that time. So, like, John Van Beesbrook or, like, Kevin Weeks – all those guys ended up with the Devils at some point because they were going to go on these long runs, you know, and like they were going to get a playoff run out of it. So of course, John Van Beesbrook gets traded to the Devils. Like, that's how it has to work because, you know, you got to show this guy some respect, and let's show him respect by trading to a good team that he can still drive to and still live on Long Island with his kids and his wife, and, you know, so, and Brad Lukowich, the same thing. He actually played for a long time with the Devils actually. But anyway, so that's the schedule coming up. We'll talk about the games after that Ranger game at the Garden when we talk next week. Let's see. You did mention that trade. There was a trade today. Carl Hagelin went from Pittsburgh to L.A. for Tanner Pearson. The trade was one for one, as Bob McKenzie put it. A little bit less sizzling than Taylor Hall for Adam Larson. I don't know. Two guys that have, like, they have a combined two goals this season. Pearson has one goal, I think no assists or something, and Hagelin has a goal and two assists. Hagelin's fast. They say Pearson's fast. I don't know if any Kings are fast. I don't know how this, why they made this trade, but I know that anytime anybody comes to the Penguins, he's immediately a superstar now. So
yeah, you can definitely put Tanner Pearson down for like 33 goals.
Absolutely. Oh, he's going to be in the Calder Trophy, not the Calder, the Conn Smythe. He's going to have two goals in their first playoff game, and Pierre Maguire is going to be like, "What about Conn Smythe Trophy winner Tanner Pearson right here, Doc?" That's the way it's going to be. That's absolutely what's going to happen.
Yeah, so it couldn't be more obvious. Like, I can see him in the jersey. I don't even know what he looks like, but I can tell you what he looks like. He looks like a Pittsburgh Penguin raising his arms up after scoring a goal.
Yeah, he's going to wear that jersey. It's like the Yankees. They put the jersey on, and all of a sudden they become a different person. Meanwhile, Carl Hagelin, he's going to play a little while in L.A., and he's going to start bouncing around. And before you know it, he's going to play for like 10 different teams. And he's going to end up on Calgary for sure. He's going to end up in Boston. That's really, you know, in Florida at some point. Like, I could just tell you right now.
Yeah, he's going to do the rounds, and then he will be playing for like SC Lugano or whatever in Switzerland. And he'll be like, oh, wow, yeah, that was an interesting career Carl Hagelin had.
He's going to bounce around. He's going to sign with the Rangers for like a, you know, like a PTO. He's going to play a season for them. Then he's going to end up in the KHL or Swedish League or something like that. So, yeah. That'll be a fun trip. So thanks for all the memories, Carl. We'll see. So yeah, that was weird to kind of see a trade go down, and it went down on the day that they announced Jim Rutherford's 3-year extension. So if you didn't like the trade, good news for you. Jim Rutherford's still your GM for 3 years.
And the picture they put up too was so funny. It was like, I like when players sign contracts extensions, you see them with the pen in their hand signing the paper, or you know they're in their jersey or whatever, and teams tweet it out. Like, now we're doing it for GMs. We got Jim Rutherford's signing. He's the general manager. He's the guy who gives out the contracts, and he's signing a contract. This is really strange.
I've never seen that before. But, yeah, I went to the Penguins website, and I'm like, what the hell is that? Very weird. Yeah, but I remember when Jim Rutherford was only supposed to be a temporary guy. Oh, he's old. He just came off the Carolina thing. He's only here temporarily. They're going to give the job to, like, Bill Guerin or Jason Botterill. One of these guys is all set to take over, and that was literally 8 years ago, right? Or what? Not even. Yeah. No, it was something. It feels like that, but two Stanley Cups and, you know, 5 years ago, and Jim Rutherford's now there for another 3 years. So, as I always say, these guys don't know anything. Basically, insiders, they don't know anything. Now, these are filtering into me because, again, I don't follow these people anymore. Thank God, but like, I'm starting to see, you know, you log on to The Athletic to read about the Islanders, and it's like, Pierre LeBrun says, these teams are in on William Nylander. These teams are not in on William Nylander. I can promise you. They're not all on William Nylander. Somebody might be. He'll probably just re-sign with the Leafs because that's how these things work out, but don't pay attention. Don't waste your time with this stuff. It's worthless. sorry to burst anybody's, but if you want to read it, that's fine, but I promise you that list is as arbitrary as –
I will say that I want this Nylander thing to go on as long as possible. It's great. I am
hoping that the Le'Veon Bell has like inspired William Nylander to just sit out the whole season. I think that would be too. Great. Hey, this guy from Pittsburgh did this. I'm going to do this too.
Willie, get as many pennies as you can get, brother. Please.
Yeah.
Make it as hard as possible on these guys when it's time for the other ones to have to go through this, and hopefully they follow suit.
Yeah, I know. It's going to be interesting. I mean, I doubt he holds out the whole time, but I could tell you right now, he's not getting traded to the Islanders, and there's all these teams that are all set to trade defenseman X and prospect Y for this guy are not going to do that.
Yeah, you know what? There's three ways this ends. It's the most likely is he resigns with the Leafs. The second most likely is that the Rangers get him, and he's amazing, and they'd give up nothing for him. And they end up both teams, and there's a third team involved in this trade where both the Leafs and the Rangers like unload a contract on the Coyotes, and they both come out gangbusters. And the third outcome is that he ends up on the Lightning somehow, like, and Steve Yzerman makes it work. Yeah. So that's it.
Well, it's Julien Brisebois now, so maybe Eisenman
pulling
some strings from the. But no, I definitely the first two definitely. I mean, I gotta say it's probably 80% he just resigns with the Leafs, 15% he ends up getting traded to the Rangers, and then I guess 5% some other completely wacky shit ends up happening. You know, so I would rule out any other Atlantic Division teams, and I would say he ends up with San Jose. Sure, why not?
Speaking of Michael Nylander was a freaking Islander killer, man. That guy scored three times every time they played the Rangers. Him, that one line where it was him and Straka, and I can't even remember. It was, I guess, maybe Jager. It was like a rotating thing, but those two guys, man, they killed me.
That might be my favorite era of Rangers hockey when it was like the Czech boys. It was just like Jager and his bros.
Yeah, it was Jager, Pruka.
Oh, who's the guy? Peter Nedved, was he on that team,
Marek Milik.
Yeah.
I think it was Czech. Like,
it's like the Czech national team. It was great. Exactly. I mean, it was great in that they, you know, they didn't do anything, so I can say it was great now. But it was just every time you turn around, the Rangers were acquiring a guy who clearly was just a buddy of Jaromir Jagr's or somebody he just wanted to play with. Hey, that's fine. That's good for me. I advocated the Islanders doing that for John Tavares. Just like anybody he grew up with. Hey, you know this guy from juniors? Good. Get him. Go for it. It's fun. But I thought that was hilarious. And then in a blink of an eye, they were all gone.
Once Jager's out, that was like, yep, Radek Dvorak's not on the Rangers anymore.
Dvorak was another one. There was another guy too. Who was some I think it was Dvorak. Jan Herkes or something was it? Halavik. That Jan Halavik. Yeah. That was the guy. They had these random man Czech guys. Anyway, that was always the only guy they didn't have was Dominik Hasek, who I guess they could have probably used, but they didn't.
Yeah.
That was pre Lundqvist, wasn't it? Or that was early.
Yeah, it was like early Lundqvist when it was Kevin Weeks was. Oh man, I'll never forget that game when Lundqvist like came on the scene against the Islanders. DiPietro was wearing his stupid like brown pads. Do you remember those? Right.
Yeah, he went pads.
It pissed me off just because it was like looking back on it and like how my viewpoint on Rick has soured. But he had those orange pads, which I loved. I loved like the bright orange pads, and then he went for those like weird brown ones. I'm like, what are you doing? Go back to the orange ones.
Yeah, I like those brown ones. They were like old school, like Billy.
Yeah, Sosa. but they were like old, but a weird color. They were like they weren't brown. They were like yellow vomit, yellowish. Like the Predators, they're like mustard yellow with the Predators jerseys.
They're like hipster old. So like it's meant to be old, but it's obviously brand new. I think that the moral of the story is that we both remember far too many games featuring the New York Rangers, which is really really irritates me.
Yeah,
I don't want it to be that way. I've been trying to ignore these guys my entire life, and it just can't be done. A couple of things I want to get to real quick. I open the show with it. I've been trying to think of a cool way to do it. I really couldn't. You know, I just want to say rest in peace to Stan Lee, who passed away this week. You know, you don't have to be a huge comic book guy to obviously know who he is and what he did. I can honestly say this is a sports podcast, but I definitely would not be here if it wasn't for the work of Stan Lee. I grew up reading a lot of comics. Kind of made me want to be a creative person. My two favorite people who wrote comics, Stan Lee and Larry Hama, who was the guy who was behind G.I. Joe, another Marvel comic. And I don't know, just, you know, there's been a lot of eulogies. There was a good one on Vulture, and I can't remember the guy who wrote it now, but it wasn't the one by Peter David. It was the other one. And it brought up a good point. Like, yeah, Stan took probably too much credit from people that he worked with and didn't give them enough credit during the early days. But he also gave the world so much that, you know what, in the end of the day, it probably all balances things out. And now we're going to have these movies for the rest of our lives. We're all going to see three times a year too. And he'll be in the cameos, and I'm sure his picture will be in the back. If you saw Deadpool 2, his cameo was as like graffiti on a wall somewhere. His face was painted there. So they'll keep working Stan in there, but thanks Stan for everything. And rest in peace. Hopefully you have a lot of time to create more characters up where you are. That's number one. Number two, I just want to give a shout out to a listener named Frankie Mankin. Frankie is an Islanders fan down in the Carolinas. He has resisted the siren call of the Hurricanes, although I guess that's not a siren call that a lot of people kind of succumb to, but he's still keeping strong as an Islanders fan down there. He's a loyal listener, and I found out this week that he's a listener. His dad grew up or lived in the house across the street from where I grew up in Seaford, and I just wanted to give a shout-out to Frankie. Thanks for listening. Thanks for keeping the faith down there. say hi to your dad for me. I knew his grandparents really well. They were his grandfather was a friend of my dad's, and they were always like working on projects and stuff together. Grandparents always bought stuff for me whenever I was selling it for like fundraisers for like the Boy Scouts or the school band. They always bought stuff for me. I always appreciated that. And his grandfather was a pilot in World War II, which is pretty badass. Like, yeah, right? Like, that's pretty hardcore. So I just thought that was pretty awesome.
It's beautiful. It's a beautiful Long Island lineage.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. And, Seaford. Yeah. That's Seaford, where my grandparents lived in Seaford.
Where?
Arlington Drive, like basically right, but you know, we're kind of in between Siemens Neck Road and the Parkway, Center State.
Oh, I think I know what you're talking about. Wait, there's a 7-Eleven there, right? Like on the corner?
There's
right on Jerusalem Avenue, Siemens Neck Road.
Yeah, it's close. It's closer to the Parkway than Siemens Neck Road.
Okay.
But yeah, you know where there's a reptile store. There was D&J's and like Leslie Pool store.
Oh yeah, yeah, like I know what you're talking about. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Yeah, right. Like kind of by there. But yeah,
I got you.
That's it.
Yeah,
Arlington Drive.
That sounded familiar, but yeah, no, I know. Yeah, Leslie Pool stores. I know what you're talking about. So yeah, Seaford is a very small but a very big place. Like it just ends up in like a sprawling. You know, those places all kind of where I live now is sort of like the same thing. Like they blend together. So
yeah.
Seaford, Levittown, Wantagh, Massapequa. You're kind of never sure what town you're in, depending on where you're at or what side of the street you're on.
It's funny too. I think people always get on Long Island town names like Massapequa, like Ronkonkoma, Massapequa. I'm like, Seaford sounds like a very Long Island town.
Founded by the
like
Dutch.
Seaford. Yeah.
Founded by the Dutch in the 1700s. I think it was 1620 something, I want to say. 1624. I might be wrong. There's a sign. If you pass the sign, you see what year Seaford was established. Please let us know in the comments. I appreciate it. It was definitely 16 something. It's a long time ago. But anyway, this is all meant to be a shout out to Frankie. Thanks a lot for listening. We appreciate it. Hope you're enjoying this. Let's see. Anything else? I think that's about it, right?
Yeah, I got nothing else. I drove through Seaford a couple weeks ago because I went to All American one night.
Oh, my favorite place ever. Love it.
Yeah, All American and Zorn's. Yeah. You had Zorn's a couple weeks ago. I think that's actually why I got All American, because you had said that you were going to Zorn's. And I was like, well, I got to get All American now.
All American. My Saturdays for a long time, All American. And then back to my friend Andy's house for either some TV, either to go to movies or to play Star Wars, the role-playing game, the tabletop sort of pen and paper role-playing game. Lived a very exciting life, I could tell you, as a teenager. All-American and tabletop role-playing games, or just to play video games. But yeah, All-American. So I ate there all the time. And my wife is from Brooklyn. And her All-American is this place, Roland Roaster. You know Roland Roaster?
I know Roland Roaster. Oh, man. Of course, yeah. My friend George from Bay Ridge, man.
Yeah, oh, we lived in Bay Ridge, yeah.
Yeah, when I talk All American, he talks Roland Roaster.
That's
and
thing,
I've been to both. It's really hard. I mean, I love them both.
Yeah. Oh yeah. That was her thing, and she was telling me about it. I'm like, oh yeah, we'll go. And oh man, I could eat those roast beef sandwiches for days. And I don't want the cheese because I feel like the cheese kind of takes away from it. But she loves that sort of nuclear yellow cheese sauce. and my daughter is eating it both too, because we had to do that. But that was, I don't know what she like. I like All American better, a little bit better, but both of them are really, really good. And actually, I might be going out to Long Island again soon. It's the holidays, so I gotta end up out there. But the next place I definitely want to go back to is Phil's Pizza, which is in Seaford. Really, really good pizza. They don't deliver, which tells you how good that pizza is, because for them to have been in business now for like 40 years without delivering tells you that the pizza is really good, because you got to get out there and go get it. And my friend just had it, and I was like, I'm going to have Phil's next time I'm out there. So there you go. So
you could do I think the crown All American Zorn's, like bang bang, like what on that show when Louis and his friend went to like an Indian food place and then the diner, and they're like, oh yeah, we did a bang bang. My big plan this weekend will be doing a Zorn's All American bang bang.
God, you see this is the you need to appreciate being a young man with a young man's body, because if I had
not gonna end well.
Yeah, no, I'd be in a hospital. Like they would put me away. If I told you things, we used to go to McDonald's. Now we're really off on a weird thing, but we used to go to McDonald's on Wantagh Avenue over there, and we used to get, me and my three friends, we would all get the same thing. We'd get 20 piece McNuggets, large fries, large drink, and then like two cheeseburgers and a Whopper, and we would eat all of it. How the hell did I eat 22 McNuggets, plus a cheeseburger, plus two cheeseburgers, plus a drink, plus fries. That's crazy. And then we go to Carvel afterwards.
You just don't understand, like, there's just like one day in your life where that just becomes not pay for it, basically.
Yeah.
And I'm there. I mean, I if I go, I went to All American. I my usual order, I get like a double quarter pounder and either one or two double doubles, depending on how I'm feeling.
Yeah.
Fries, maybe a shake. If I don't get a double double, the second double double, I get a vanilla shake.
Yeah.
And no matter what it is, it's my heart. I feel like my heart is beating through my chest. And 8 minutes later.
And the beauty of that meal that you just described, two double doubles, shake. You know, maybe fries or onion rings or something like that. The beauty of that whole place is that meal will cost you $6. Like,
yeah.
It's almost impossible to spend more than $7 on any meal at All American.
The best part of All American out on this, on our side of the window where we're ordering, is because of like the way that it is. It's like that lobby. Nobody knows if you've ordered yet or not. Somebody always gets mad because they get cut, like, online, and you just hear, like, you know, a Salt of the Earth Long Islander saying, like, "Hey, it's my turn.
Oh, I'm here," like that. Yeah. That place, it is, and I mean, what's funny about that place though is you can tell exactly when to not go because you see people standing outside, like the doors are open,
yep,
and the line is out, and you're just like, "I think I'm gonna go someplace else."
The Massapequa Little League and Seaford Little League games just ended it all at the same time.
Yeah, right. So you're just like, you know what? I'm just gonna make a U-turn and go someplace else. Yeah. So, but yeah. Wow. That's a little tour I didn't expect. That's pretty cool. See, see what one shout out does. It's awesome. I did remember the one thing. One other thing I wanted to bring up. So I started this season doing like movie reviews because I didn't think the Islanders games were going to be a lot of fun to watch. Obviously I've been wrong. So I wanted to add something else. So I got here. I got an idea for your moment of trots. So I think we should always end every episode with a moment of trots. Some wise words of wisdom from the coach, from his like post game scrum, or you know, some kind of quote from a newspaper or whatever. And so we talked about it before, but I think the first one is important. It's when Jordan Eberwilli missed that assignment, and you know, kind of led to that game winning goal. Trotz said, "That's why the details matter." So there you go. That's your moment of Trotz. Just remember, that's why the details matter. Yeah. There you go. I'm going to try and remember to do this now because I totally forgot about the movie thing. But yeah, so that's why the details. See, that's why the details matter, because I totally forgot about it. Okay. Tell everybody your Twitter account again so they can follow you there.
It's the Big Lebowski with two E's.
The Big Lebowski with two E's. Go there and see Nikolai Kuhlman's hat trick. You definitely won't regret it. You'll definitely enjoy his non-reaction to scoring three goals in like 5 minutes. It's pretty cool. You should read Lighthouse Hockey every day for your most up-to-date Islanders news and discussion. You should leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. We really appreciate it. Thanks again, Frankie Mankin, for listening to us. Really appreciate it. Thank you all for listening to us and downloading us. Thank you to Noel and Dan for posting Isles Buzz this week. After you listen to us, listen to them if you didn't already, or listen to them first, then listen to us. They go together. It's great to have those guys posting. It's tough sometimes with schedules, but I'm glad they're back. And you got two podcasts in the same day. How awesome is that? Plus a Rangers game. So there you go. All right. Thanks
plus
a lot.
Rangers game.
What's that?
I said plus a Rangers game.
Yeah, plus a Rangers game that also features the New York Islanders. So I totally forgot about it. So thanks a lot, and we will talk to you sometime next week. All right. Later. Bye-bye. Yeah.